Famous Greek philosopher Aristotle once said, "Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom." And founding father of the United States of America, Benjamin Franklin, seemed to espouse similar thoughts. There are three things extremely hard: steel, a diamond, and to know one's self. One is saying that self-awareness is the root of wisdom, while the other is saying that self-awareness is a difficult state to achieve. Of course, this book is not necessarily about self-awareness, but we know that the process of gaining self-awareness is similar to getting to read and analyze people better. It's also just as difficult. This chapter focuses on what we can discover about others through directly asking them indirect questions. From there, we can learn much about people based on their answers. In many ways, it mirrors what we can understand about ourselves through the same process. How do people typically gain self-awareness? The focus is geared around people asking themselves simple and direct questions that hopefully hint at realizations just outside our conscious knowledge. Typically, they'll ask themselves questions, again, such as, "What makes me happy and fulfilled?" Such direct questions should be considered a mediocre starting point, because these questions force you to ramble and create an answer out of nothing. It often doesn't lead to much insight other than pretty platitudes. You might lie or even interpret the question in unhelpful ways. Seriously, try to answer that previous question in a way that actually gives you some meaning and direction. What about if you were asked something like, "What parts of your week do you look forward to the most?" Or, "What would you do if you won the lottery and could choose how to spend your time?" Or, "What is your favorite type of long-term vacation?" These questions elicit concrete answers, specific pieces of you or other people that you can work with and seek to delve into. Really, we're asking about people's behaviors, which provide the best basis for understanding people. Thoughts and intentions are important, but ultimately, if they are never translated into action, they are useless for our purposes. And really, this is the introduction to how to analyze pieces of information from people that are ambiguous and not definitive by nature. Hello, listeners. This is Russell with Newton Media Group. We're going to interrupt the podcast for just a moment to bring you a message from our sponsor, Let's Get Checked. Their mission is to make professional health testing easily accessible. They offer fast, affordable, and confidential at-home test kits to help you take a measured approach to your health. Let's Get Checked customers can get 20% off. Here's how it works. Go to trylgc.com/nmg. Choose your test online, activate your test, and collect your sample. Return it using the prepaid shipping label. Within 2 to 5 days, you'll get the results without ever having to go to a doctor's office or laboratory. This isn't just for men who think they're in a funk. All men should be testing their hormone levels on a regular basis, and my test was easy, quick, and informative. Get 20% off at trylgc.com/nmg. That's trylgc.com/n as in Newton, M as in media, G as in group. And now, let's get back to the episode. Through innocent questioning, we can uncover a host of information that represents an entire worldview or set of values. For instance, what if you were to ask someone where they obtained their news and which television channel, which set of publications, which magazines, and which pundits or hosts they preferred? It's a prime illustration of an indirect question that lets you understand quite a bit about how they think. It involves a bit of extrapolation and guesswork, but at least there's a concrete piece of information to go on, and many concrete associations with it. We start this chapter with some of these indirect questions before going even more in depth by asking people for stories and seeing what we can glean from those. These questions are phrased to challenge and inspire deep thought. They ask people to dive deeper such that we can begin to understand their behavioral and thought patterns. 1. What kind of prize would you work hardest for, and what punishment would you work hardest to avoid? The answer to this question might help identify the true motive behind an individual's drive. Beyond surface-level things, what is really motivating people? What do they really care about? And what type of pain or pleasure matters to them? On an instinctual level, what really matters the most in both a positive and negative way? In a way, this answer also reflects values. For example, gamblers all want one prize, the jackpot. They try and try again, whether it be with scratchers or slot machines to try and win the big money prize. Are they motivated by winning back their losses? Is their hope to become richer than they can imagine? Do they actually want it, or are they filling a void and keeping themselves distracted? Why are they working so hard? You might surmise that their motivation is the thrill and rush of the risk involved. Do they care about making steady pay or finding their purpose? Maybe, and maybe not. When you can dig into what someone wants the most and why, you can often find what is driving them without having to ask it directly. The way people answer this question will clearly tell you their priorities and what they consider pain and pleasure in their lives. Look for the emotion behind people's answers here, and you can get a pretty good read on their values. A goal of rising to CEO level doesn't just exist in a vacuum. What are the feelings, emotions, and fulfilled expectations that come from wanting it? Likewise, wanting to avoid being poor speaks to a very specific desire for security and safety from danger. 2. Where do you want to spend money, and where do you accept skimping on or skipping altogether? This answer reveals what matters to someone's life and what they want to experience or avoid. This is not really about the item or items to be purchased. There comes a point where material belongings no longer have a use, and it's about what those items represent and provide. For example, sometimes spending money on experiences instead of a new purse has the potential to improve someone's overall well-being and outlook on life. Again, look for the underlying emotions and motivations behind the answer. So, what do you have no problem splurging on, and what doesn't matter to you? For instance, when deciding on vacation expenditures, people may opt to splurge on an epic boat excursion and stay in a shabby hotel. This reveals their desire to experience an unforgettable moment rather than staying in a nice hotel with golden toilets, which they view as a waste of money. Others might opt for the opposite and revel in their creature comforts while not seeing much of the scenery. In either case, they've used their money to quite literally identify and spend toward their priorities and values. Where your money goes is an important part of what makes you happy. So if you can pay attention to where you let it flow and where you cut it off, you'll immediately know what matters to you on a daily basis. Contrast this question to if you were to ask someone, what do you value in your daily life? Again, there is a concrete answer here to analyze. This same principle applies equally to time, money, and effort. Where these things flow, whether consciously or unconsciously, represents the values people possess. 3. What is your most personally significant and meaningful achievement, and also your most meaningful disappointment or failure? It's common that experiences, whether they're good or bad, shape people into who they are. Achievements and failures tie into how someone sees oneself. Significant experiences also tend to create their self-identities. You are this kind of person because you did this and succeeded or failed. We can't escape the fact that past occurrences will often influence our current and future actions. They don't have to, but this isn't a book about changing your mindsets. The point is that large events will reverberate throughout our entire lives. So this question will get a response about how people view themselves, for better or worse. Failure will painfully poke perceived flaws they hate about themselves, while achievements will bring up the strengths they're proud of. A career woman who has worked her way up the corporate ladder might proudly reflect on her accomplishment. Why does she consider this her greatest achievement? Because she values independence, resilience, and determination. And that's exactly what it takes to get to that career pinnacle. She looks back to the things she did in order to get that corner office, and she feels positively about them. Thus, the answer about her career accomplishments is actually a story about the positive traits she utilized in reaching that point, her self-identity. You can imagine that the same negative type of self-identity might unfold if the same woman were to talk about her failures and ended up in a job that she despised. Those are the exact things she hates the most. The way that people answer this question shows who they want to be, and this is reflected in exactly how their expectations have either been fulfilled or not. 4. What is effortless and what is always exhausting? This is a question that's designed to better understand what people actually enjoy. Something that is effortless isn't always an innate talent, but rather an indication that they enjoy it. On the other hand, something that is always exhausting is not always about people's lack of competency, but rather a distaste for the actual activity. Thus, answers to this question can indicate where people find natural joy and enjoyment, even if they don't realize it themselves. For instance, as a baker answers this question, she may recognize her rather mediocre capacity for creativity for blending ingredients together to make a dessert. Although she is above average, she is not naturally talented at it, and it has been very difficult for as long as she can remember. She was not innately talented with culinary creativity, and yet she finds joy in it such that she is always driven to it. It's challenging, but effortless in a way that she doesn't grow tired of. On the other hand, she may have a natural talent in understanding and following traditional recipes, yet it is not something that she values or particularly cares about. If we were to look at only her innate talents, we would conclude that she should stick to only executing the dishes of others, but it's simply not what she values. As mentioned previously, wherever our time, effort, energy, and money goes, such are our values. 5. If you could design a character in a game, what traits would you emphasize and which would you ignore? This question asks what people see as their ideal self and also what they feel is less important in the world. Imagine that you have a limited number of points to give a person, but 6 traits to spread the points across. Which will you choose to emphasize and bolster, and which will you choose to leave average or even lacking? Suppose you have the ability to choose between the traits of charisma, academic intelligence, sense of humor, honesty, resilience, and emotional awareness. The traits you'd choose to put the maximum number of points in is how you'd like others to see you. It may represent your current composition of traits, or it might be completely opposite to who you currently are. In either case, it's more than likely that this either represents how you see yourself or how you would like to see yourself. And the other traits? Well, they simply matter less. In turn, they seek out people with those traits they like and are less keen to seek out those with the other traits. There are probably stories behind each of the traits that people might choose as well. A related question to ask others is, what traits are common in other people? This question comes from a 2010 psychological study by Dustin Wood, in which he found that people tended to describe others with similar traits as themselves. Presumably, this is because people tend to see their own qualities in others. No one believes that their mental makeup of traits is uncommon, and thus, they believe everyone has a similar perspective and way of thinking as them. Answers to this question are a direct insight into what traits people believe they have, for better or worse. From there, you know what kind of approach they have to the world: kind, generous, distrusting, mischievous, or even ill-spirited. 6. What charity would you donate millions to if you had to? Answering this question forces one to answer what they care about in the world at large, rather than just in their own life. Will you donate to an animal shelter or a charity for cancer? Perhaps you would sponsor a child from a third world country. They all say very different things. You might have had a first or secondhand experience with any of these causes. Whatever the case, it shows what matters when people start to think outside of themselves. You can see a whole sector of the world that they are concerned about, and this allows you to see how they view their place in the world. In other words, whose interests do they tend to prioritize or be motivated by? As always, look to the underlying emotion. Being able to ask these questions evokes a deeper connection to people's values, ideas, and awareness. The purpose of asking these is to, again, examine behavior. These questions guide a person in thinking about the most relevant aspects of his or her character. They also make people think beyond predictable statements and organically stimulate more meaningful thought. Look beyond the answers and read between the lines. Critical thinking, evaluation, and reflection are the key skills at play here. This has been Think Like a Psychologist: How to Analyze Emotions, Read Body Language and Behavior, Understand Motivations, and Decipher Intentions. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Patrick King. Production copyright by Patrick King.